So I need to bring the committee to order, so I'll bring the committee to order. Thank you, Representative Wardlow moves House File 138 be rolled over for possible inclusion in the omnibus early ed finance bill. That, welcome to committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair. Steve Simon, State Representative. Thank you very much to the members of the committee. It's an honor to be here. House File 138 is the Community Education Funding Increase Bill, or I should say Funding Restoration Bill. Before I get into the money part, which I know you're concerned about, let me just talk more broadly about these programs and their value to all of us in Minnesota. Community education, as most of you undoubtedly know, really serves all learners in our community in hundreds of school districts across the state. And it really is a way for us, through our schools, to maximize resources, not only physical plant by using, in many cases, unused areas, unused schools, but also human capacity as well. And it really extends to all learners, lifelong learners, from essentially cradle to grave. And it's been tremendously and extraordinarily successful almost everywhere. And I can speak from personal experience because before I was in the Minnesota legislature, one of the things I was very involved with was the St. Louis Park Community Education Advisory Council, or SEAC. So I was on the St. Louis Park SEAC for a number of years and really grew very close to and got to observe many of these programs firsthand. And I got to tell you, they are hugely popular in my area. And it's a great way to really bond communities. I know that sounds kind of corny, but it absolutely is true. I mean, from my own personal experience, and over those number of years, I came into contact with some great people, saw firsthand how these efforts really do, as I said, bond or bind communities together, give kids a place to learn and grow, give adults a chance to learn English or to get a GED, and to really better themselves. Just a few kind of broad statistics, and I'm sure some others may touch on this, and I don't want to duplicate, but my understanding is at latest count there are about 900,000 people involved in adult options-related programming in Minnesota, whether that's adult basic education or other adult enrichment or English as a second language. There are about 1.7 million kids in youth development and school-age care programs. There are about 200,000 in early education programs, which, of course, include ECFB and school readiness programs. So the numbers are there. I mean, the audience is there. There's a real appetite for this. And, of course, there's an excellent bang for the buck. By one measure, we get back essentially $4 for every dollar invested in these programs. So this isn't throwing away money. This is money very, very well spent. As many of you know, community education in one form or another has been around here in Minnesota since 1971. From 1987 to the year 2003, the amount was set with the levy and aid formula at about $5.95 per person, per resident, that is. It was then cut in 2003. After being at that rate for 16 years, it was then cut to $5.23. There was a slight uptick 2 years ago to $5.42, and what this bill would do is restore it to the 1987 level. I mean, that's really what we're talking about. So although it's nominally an increase, it's really a restoration of what had been for 16 uninterrupted years from 1987 to 2003. And so that's what this bill seeks to do. It's $5.95 from the current $5.42. We're already on an upward trajectory. Why not go back to what we were and where we were before the cuts of 2003? The bottom line in terms of cost here, Madam Chair, is the state share anyway would be just over $1 million for the entire biennium. By my count, $1,078,000, according to the fiscal note that you may have, and then the rest is in a local levy authority. So I would just say it's a very wise and very far-reaching investment, and others can speak to some of the details as well and the conceptual part. So, Madam Chair, with your permission, I'd like to introduce a testifier.
Yes, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
This is, she can introduce herself, but I know Mary personally. She's from St. Louis Park, and she is the manager of youth and family programs for community education in St. Louis Park. She does a fantastic job. She's a hero in our community, and she's here to testify about what is her passion.
Well, thank you, Representative Simon. I haven't been called a hero in a long time, so I'm going to hold on to that one for a little while. Madam Chair and Representatives, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. As Representative Simon said, my name is Mary O'Brien. I'm Manager of Youth and Family Services Programs for Community Education in the St. Louis Park Schools. And I'm privileged to testify on behalf of House File 138. As Representative Simon indicated, this amount moving from $5.42 per capita to $5.95 per capita constitutes a return to the funding level set in 1987 by the legislature. So it's a 20-year-old amount, but we'll take it. Everybody in this room and all of your constituents really are community education. Community education exists in all 342 school districts in Minnesota. The programs that you and your constituents ensure are available through a general levy and aid formula are an investment in the lives of all Minnesotans. As Representative Simon told you, over 900,000 adults statewide participate in one or more adult ed programs offered through community education. 1.7 million youth are served through one or more community education programs. Nearly 200,000 children ages birth through five are served through one or more community education's early ed programming. By creating an environment that encourages all citizens, womb to tomb, to be part of lifelong learning and active citizens, community education ensures that each Minnesota community remains vital with energized citizen participants. Because you and your constituents are community education, you do this by maximizing resources. As Representative Simon indicated, for every dollar of state levy and aid support, community education generates more than $4 in additional revenue, and that's an excellent return on your investment. When you or your neighbors attend an evening event at your child or grandchild's school, it's community education that made sure that could happen through its facility scheduler, who notified the custodians. They knew to open the doors. They knew to set up the chairs in the gym. They'll be there to make sure the building gets closed down. And the building monitor, hired for that evening by community education, helps ensure that you all will be safe. Collaboration is a hallmark of community education. For example, many senior citizens throughout the state are organized, housed, and sustained through collaborative efforts and partnerships between community education and community organizations, groups, and businesses. William Morris of Decision Resources tells us that community education participants are better informed and view their school district much more positively than non-participants. He indicates that the impact of community education programs goes far beyond simply providing opportunities beyond the K-12 system. It significantly alters the perceptions about the entire educational enterprise. I think that's very powerful. This happens because you and your constituents, again, you are community education. Through the general levy, we have the infrastructure for all of our community education programs. The levy provides each community to use its local resources to tailor programs to meet the needs of their particular community. This is especially critical at a time when demographics are rapidly changing in so many Minnesota communities, whether in greater Minnesota or in the metro area. Just in our home community of St. Louis Park, I've been there 8 years, and at one of our schools, the number of children on free and reduced lunch has gone from under 20% to 50%. And that's a lot in a small period of time. And we certainly see that in all of our programs, that our demographics are changing. And a real key piece of community education is the ability to offer programs that everybody can access. And I think that that's really, really critical. The levy allows for community education to offer fee assistance and scholarships. These are offered required by our school boards and our community education advisory councils. But one of the reasons why, personally, I want to be able to continue to offer scholarships and fee assistance to families is it helps to level the playing field so everyone in the community has equal access to all learning opportunities. And we just see the importance of that. The 2003 state budget cut reduced our... In 1987, the legislature supported community education through the general levy and aid formula. The state budget cut it. It was partially restored in fiscal year 05. And as you're all aware, costs for everything have increased in the past 20 years. community education has not been immune to that. However, in the past 20 years, as funding has been cut to schools, cities, and other community ed partners, community education has done what it can to continue to offer classes and programs. And as good as we are, we've just about maxed out our ability to do more with less. We're at less with less. Over the last 20 years, you and your constituents have contributed to the well-being and growth of every member of your community through community education. And I know you've seen and felt this, the results of this powerful program as you've campaigned and when you are in your home district. I have the opportunity to see it every day. I see it in the faces of the learners at Central Community Center where I work. Babies and their mothers, both new to the United States, come to school together thanks to your support through community education of the Family Literacy Program. She's able to learn English while her child receives high-quality care. In our preschool child care room, I see it in the doll furniture that the seniors at Lenox Community Center made in their workshop for the children. After school, I see third graders skipping down the hall on their way from a youth enrichment class to their school-aged child care program. In the evenings, our gyms are filled with community members in their 20s through 60s, playing basketball, taking jazzercise classes. Down the hall, people are learning all sorts of things to enrich their lives and become stronger members of the community. My daughter-in-law-to-be, a recent new homeowner in St. Louis Park, is getting involved in her community through a collaborative program sponsored by Community Education and the St. Louis Park Friends of the Arts. Her family is from Kansas. Her mother is a school teacher, and when her mother was asking her about how did this happen and who was sponsoring it, and she said, well, it's the schools, it's community ed. It was a foreign concept to her, and she's, an educator herself in the Kansas City area. And so it's those things that make you stand proud and stand tall to be Minnesotans. So we're not asking for much here. We're just asking you to get us back to our 1987 levy. But you and your constituents can continue to support your community's lifelong learning by restoring that general community ed formula. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Simon?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'd like to introduce one person just to wave, not to speak, and another one just to speak. There's another person here from my district who is the head of community education in St. Louis Park, Linda Severide. If you could just wave. She came here just to be moral support, but she is also a hero in our community and has done a phenomenal job in St. Louis Park. Yeah. Next, I would like the committee, if I could, Madam Chair, briefly to hear from Jackie Johnson from the Chaska School District.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jackie Johnson, and I am the Director of Community Education for District 112, which serves the Chaska, Harbin, Victoria areas. However, I'm coming here today on behalf of the State Association. You've just heard the testimony about the benefits of community education. Also within House File 138 is a provision to increase the minimum level. And that number was put in there years ago, back in the 70s, so that we would have a minimum level of funding for all districts across the state. The number began at 1,335, and we are asking you to raise that level to 2,000. I'm speaking on behalf of these districts because I could not, after numerous phone calls and emails, find anybody in the state that comes from a small district that could afford the time to come and testify on their own behalf. Small districts are pretty much one-man shows, and so I am here to please give a plea on their behalf. And to do that, I did get testimony from two people, and I will be very brief with this. But I wanted you to hear from their words. One of them is the Montevideo Community Education Director, and he basically says, I'm asking your support for House File 138, restoring the funding for community education back to the $595 and increasing the minimum amount in a small district to receive community education programming. I'm unable to be at the hearing today because I have several commitments to youth and family programs and services that I don't have staff to cover when I'm gone. I have been the community education director in Montevideo School District for 32 years, and this is the most difficult budgetary period I can remember. This is true for community education departments in most school districts our size and smaller across the state. We are expected and assigned the task of providing and administrating a wide variety of programs and services from ECFE, adult enrichment, youth enrichment, adults with disabilities, and with funding to support these services as it continues to decrease. As an example, the Montevideo School District in the last 3 years local tax dollar funding to support community education programs and services has been reduced by 42%. The community education funding formula has been reduced to a level less than it was 19 years ago. As a result, the communities had to raise fees for services considerably. In Montevideo, we've raised fees between 40 and 70%. We've cut staff time, and the community education director has had to assume the role of also the health and safety director for 50% of their time. They've also reduced services to families and youth. In greater Minnesota, community education is the only option for most of these services and for quality of life that most people want for themselves and their children. Without adequate basic community ed funding, staff are cut and eliminated. Programs and services are eliminated or reduced, and the ability to coordinate services and sustain collaborative efforts is severely threatened. I strongly encourage you to reinstate the community ed funding formula back to the $595 per capita and the formula level to the $2,000 per capita level. The only other piece that I think message that Lisa Cruz, she's the director of McGregor Community Education, and she said the most important piece for her for you to hear is that community education is vital to rural communities. So many important opportunities for youth and adults derive from community education. More funding is needed for rural communities to survive. Raising fees is not an option when in McGregor 66% of our families qualify for free or reduced lunch and cannot afford to pay any more. Community education is not an option for rural Minnesota. It is necessary and vital and the only component we have for our schools and our communities. I think we forget that in the metro area that often we have a lot of services we collaborate with, but in rural Minnesota, this is the only option. House File 138 would help 54 of our smallest districts. In the early 70s, the legislature, in their wisdom, created a funding system for a statewide delivery system. That system is currently unraveling. This bill is essential to preserve our statewide delivery system for community education. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Representative Simon, we have a couple questions, and I have a question first of all. I think when we're looking at our area and how it's funded, of course you know this is funded by property tax levies, and if you could explain how much the bill would affect local property tax levies, or I could also ask the fiscal analyst to talk about that, but...
Yes, I do have the aggregate numbers, Madam Chair. Basically, and I'm rounding a little bit, but not much, it's about, over the course of the biennium, I'll work off of the notes that I have. Yeah, it's, according to the fiscal note that we have, it would be roughly, the state money would be about $1,078,000 for the entire biennium, and then the property tax portion of that would be about $2 million over the biennium. So it's roughly 2 to 1. So it would be, that's how it would affect local property taxes.
Is Representative Simon, is that $2 million split over the whole state, or how does that work?
Yes,
is it per,
that's the aggregate number, $2 million over the whole state.
I wonder what that would come out per property taxpayer.
I'm not sure.
Okay.
That would depend on the district.
Right. We might want to take a look at that. Why don't we go with questions, Representative Wardlow?
Representative Chair, I'm hearing from the peanut gallery that it's 40 cents.
40 cents.
Per capita.
Thank you. Representative Wardlow?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just looking at the fiscal note, and you sort of asked the same question, because I noticed the cost of the state... In 08 is $582,000, then it goes to $496,000, and then to $311,000, and then to $219,000. That's the cost of the state. So apparently, the levies are picking up the difference.
Representative Wardlow, I'm not sure.
It seems like the cost of the state's going down, yet the levy is going up from $542 per resident to $595 per resident, and levy authority. If you look on the back page of the fiscal note.
Representative Wardlow, why don't we ask our fiscal analyst to answer that? Ms. Adrian?
It looks like it's getting cheaper and cheaper for the state, but apparently it's not getting cheaper and cheaper elsewhere. You know, it must be the levy picking up the difference.
Madam Chair, Representative, unless someone else has a better answer, I would have to get back to you as well, because I noticed the same thing.
What happens is that statewide is that as a community ability to levy increases, the amount of aid decreases. so as that disparity goes across the state, and it's different from each community based on their ability, their levy authority, their ability to levy. So as the levy piece goes up, then your aid piece goes down. Right?
Representative Wardlow?
It looks that way to me. I was just seeing if other people saw it that way or if I was interpreting it wrong.
I think that's correct. Do you have a follow-up? Or?
No, I just, that was my question. And so taxpayers are paying more money for this, it looks like.
Yep.
Ms. Johnson?
Well,
our taxes are going up.
I suppose you could look at it that way. The aid is also taxpayer money. One is a local levy, and aid is state taxpayer money. So taxpayers are paying just out of a different pocket, I suppose.
Well, I understand that. I get emails from people that you're shifting the burden to the local taxpayer, and I'm getting tired of it. And so I'm just bringing up some. I'm being a devil's advocate. Even, you know, I support community education. I'm just being a devil's advocate.
Representative,
or the devil, whichever you want to say.
I think it's a tough year to talk about property tax increases. And so this committee moves forward, that's just something we have to take into consideration. Representative Simon?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to reiterate, because I know not everyone was here immediately at the beginning of the meeting, where I mentioned that this is a restoration to the level that was in effect from 1987 to 2003. So it's an increase in a sense, yes, but this is just a restoration to where we were for 16 straight years before cuts in 03. And I'm not trying to refight past battles. What's past is past, but that is what happened. And then it was restored slightly in 2005, and this would get us to the level that we were, you know, 20 years ago, essentially.
Thank you. We have three more questions, and then we are going to have to move to the next bill member so we can keep moving. Representative Murphy M. Mary?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Johnson, I got confused when you were talking about the amount of money that you wanted to raise it up to, and then you threw a $2,000 in there. $2,000 or $2,000 what?
Ms. Johnson. Madam Chair, what that the $2,000 is about is the minimum level. In statute right now, there is a level, it's $1,335. And that's the lowest, that's the minimum level. If you have a population size less than that, you get that level of funding. So there are 54 districts in the state who have a population size of less than 2,000. And what that says is that those districts would then receive at least a funding level of a 2,000 population, because your calculation for your formula is based on your population.
Okay, so the 2,000 is the population, and the funding level is at what dollar amount?
It's $595.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's a clarification. And then I just wanted to make a comment that from Ms. O'Brien with talking about what programs we're at. For community education, and I know that they vary across the state, but Madam Chair, I said this at the time. When we took the math test, the 11th grade math test, I thought that there was a demonstrated need for adult math classes, and I was going to ask community ed to consider teaching adults some math, because more and more people are going to become aware of what questions are in the test, and I would expect that more and more people will want to pass the questions or to answer the questions correctly, and so there is a need for some place for people to go and get that education in their communities, and community ed would be a good place for it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. I have one last question, Representative Groffalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, Representative Simon, on Sunday I was listening to the radio and you were debating a Republican and you just made that guy sound like an idiot. It was unbelievable. You're a total genius. Like, I don't think that guy's ever going to be on the radio with you again.
Very funny.
It was me, Madam Chair.
Oh! Representative Garofalo. I missed that. Thank you.
The two questions. This I know this happened last week, but the fiscal note was not on the website again last night.
Okay.
I went over to the Senate website, and I could not find the fiscal note. I don't know if anyone else had that problem. Again, when I came into committee, it's the first time I saw the fiscal note on it. So,
thank you for mentioning that. We have been having a problem with fiscal notes this week because of the President's Day holiday and the fact that the Department of Finance had the day off yesterday.
Okay.
Of course, we didn't have the day off, but they did. And so that was probably part of the hang-up, and then we can ask our fiscal analyst when she's done talking.
Okay, because usually I think that's the way it's supposed to be, Madam Chair. Am I correct that if we look the night beforehand, we should be able to see the fiscal notes, correct?
Ms. Adrians?
Oh, yeah. Madam Chair and Representative, I looked into that, and what was recommended was that I still request a fiscal note so that there would be a House file so that you could find it. I think there is a few-day lag time. Because I looked to try to find it, too, and I didn't see it online.
Okay.
Were you mentioning that you tried to find the fiscal note online?
Yeah,
and I think that it's there's a few days that I can, so hopefully we won't have that problem in the future. But I'll keep working on it and make sure.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
No, it's not your fault, Madam Chair. And then one question for the testifier. You mentioned in your testimony that the increase in the minimum population guarantee would affect 54 school districts. Does the testifier know how many school districts right now are under the 1335 limit? So basically, what would be the number? I'll try not to bias my question here, but what would be the number of school districts that we are inflating the number of students that are really present in the district or the population estimate?
Ms. Johnson?
I do have the answer to that.
And Representative Garofalo, I will offer to write a memo or an email or a note or make a phone call on behalf of the fiscal notes as well to see if we can get those moving.
Madam Chair, the answer to that is currently 39.
So, Madam Chair, then the total would be, if I'm doing my Minnesota math right here, 93 then of the how many total school districts are there in the state?
342.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Well, thank you, Representative Simon. Any closing comments?
None other than to say for the record that our joint radio appearance was a discussion, not a debate. Very civil. That's all. But on a serious note, thank you very much for everyone's attention and time. Your time is precious, and thanks for spending some of it on this.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being here. And Representative Simons, House File 138 will be laid over for possible inclusion in Omnibus Finance. Bill. Next, we will have Representative Madore come up. Oh, Hornstein is next. Representative Hornstein, as you get ready, Representative Hornstein, we're going to be approving the minutes. And let's see. Representative Lane, have you read the minutes?
Yes, ma'am. I move them.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Lane, whose approval of the minutes for February 15th. Is there any discussion? Okay, hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay. Motion prevails, and the minutes for February 15th are approved. We have a couple of quick announcements. Representative Hornstein, it'll be just a second here. One, if you remember that this Thursday, the hearing is for ADE, and it's at the Hub Center. I'm hoping you all will be there. I think it's going to be a really good hearing. Notify Sarah if you want to ride in the carpool. But, of course, we expect everybody to be there. We will be hearing Representative Winkler's ABE bill. Representative Murphy also has an ABE bill. So that should be very good. Just a heads up that we're going to be having some night meetings. You probably heard that we're going to have a very busy schedule, so possibly from the mid part of the month to the end of the month, what we would probably try to do is do them on the same nights as committee. So if you can look at your Tuesdays and Thursday evenings and potentially plan to be with all of us. In the Pioneer Press, there's an article that came out on early childhood, so we just want to let you know that's in the packets. And also there's a new tracking sheet in the packets. I know some of you are more interested in the fiscal numbers, and I want to refer to Ms. Adrians to talk a little bit about it. This tracking sheet has the governor's numbers on there now.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I hope everybody's interested in the numbers and fascinated by the tracking sheet. But what I did, it's very similar when I did the presentation before and gave you a kind of a simplified version. What I did was add the governor's numbers for the 2008 and 9 biennium and the 2010 and 11 as well. And then there's a column in there that has the difference between the governor's recommendations and the base. And everything that is in italics would be new items or change items of the governor's. So I hope it makes sense. If you have any questions, please ask me. One other thing I would point out, under the Department of Human Services, there are two pieces that might seem kind of confusing. There's an FFP revenue piece, and that's a deduction in spending. And then there's on line 40 where it says MFIP for legal non-citizens. That the reason I have that in the Healthcare and Human Services Committee is it's part of what we're trying to do is track spending for entire programs in the committees that they occur in. So that's a little piece of MFIT where normally you might, I might track it for this committee, but it's part of a program that is in the Healthcare and Human Services Committee. I hope that makes sense, but I'm happy to talk about it more if anyone wants further clarification.
Okay, thank you. So members note that's kind of the first tracking sheet, and we know as we get the House numbers on there, that will appear on there eventually. And if you have any questions, ask Ms. Adrians, and thank you for putting that together. Again, the fiscal notes, if they're not available, we'll be getting them to the committee members. That was because of the President's Day holiday. And then I think you all know that all the fiscal committees are going before Ways and Means. Starting tonight, our committee will be going before Ways and Means. Representative Eastland and I will be talking a little bit about what we see for the future for the committee, what we're interested in, what our priorities are. If you're interested in that, that's at 5:30 tonight after this committee. We also made the cover of Session Weekly. I hope everybody saw that with a picture of the young lady that was here, Lydia Johnson, and she will also be coming to Ways and Means tonight because an ECFE participant. So I thought that was particularly effective to have her. So thanks for her testimony and her coming before the committee. With that, we'll move on to House File 751. Bornstein, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Oh, we need someone to move the bill. Oh, so moved. Representative Fritz moves House File 751 for inclusion in the Omnibus Early Childhood Learning Finance Division. If you could state your name for the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair members. I'm State Representative Frank Hornstein from District 60B in Southwest Minneapolis. And House File 751 is, as you can see, a short bill, but it addresses a big issue. As you know, many of our themes and the various education committees this year have revolved around the achievement gap. And we have many students who have, passed their general education development requirements and are ready to move on to take the next very important step in their lives, but now face a pretty important hurdle in the $75 test fee. And so this issue was brought to my attention by Lydia Lee, who is an excellent member of the Minneapolis School Board, and she's here to provide some additional testimony. And Ms. Lee may have to leave quickly because she has a school board meeting. So we'll hear her testimony, and maybe if people have specific questions of Ms. Lee, they could maybe ask them after her testimony, which I know is a little out of the tradition, but if we could do that.
Welcome to the committee. I think that would be fine, and if you could state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, honorable committee members, I am Lydia Lee, director on the Minneapolis Board of Education. I also served on the special commission that was spearheaded by County Commissioner Gail Dorfman to end homelessness in Hennepin County within 10 years. That document that was produced from that commission is called Heading Home Hennepin. I think that when we think about education in the state, we're really thinking about more than just K-12 education. Many of our students are unable to earn a high school diploma due to circumstances in their lives. And so many of them are trying to make up time by working towards their GEDs. It's well documented that education is the key that opens doors to greater opportunities. And this bill we are supporting today represents hope for the homeless who cannot afford the testing fees and wish to improve their life situations through getting a GED and thus having greater opportunities towards better paying jobs. We believe this would really be a very small cost to the state, but it would significantly decrease the burden to taxpayers for health and social services now delivered to this group of people. I'm going to stop here, and I'm going to introduce some other people I've brought today. We have Kathy Tenbrook, who's the coordinator for the City of Minneapolis and Hennepin County on eliminating homelessness in the county. And then also we have Carly Peterson, who is with our Adult Basic Education Department in Minneapolis Public Schools. And we also have Debbie Jans, who is a member of HA, that's H-A-H, which stands for Homeless Against Homelessness. So I'll let Kathy Tenbrook give you some more information about the needs.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
My name is Kathy Tenbrook. I'm the coordinator to end homelessness for the City of Minneapolis and Hennepin County. Madam Chair, committee, thank you very much for having me here today. As some of you know, and as Lydia Lee just mentioned, the City of Minneapolis and Hennepin County recently approved a 10-year plan to end homelessness called Heading Home Hennepin. It was approved unanimously by both the Hennepin County Board and the City Council. The plan was developed by a commission of community leaders and experts in the homeless community with the focus on what it was going to take to actually end and break the cycles of homelessness for men, women, children, and homeless unaccompanied youth in our community. The plan lays out many goals, but one of the key goals in the plan is to build the capacity of self-support for families and individuals. Education and employment are the key ingredients to ending the cycles of homelessness. Our commission requested that the state consider a waiver of the GED testing fees for people experiencing homelessness because we see this as one critical way we can break down barriers to education and ultimately to employment. From the statewide Wilder survey on homelessness that's done every 3 years, we know from the latest data that we have, which is the 2003 data, the 2006 data will be out shortly, that one out of four people experiencing homelessness in the state lacks a high school diploma. And in a question to all of the unemployed adults in the state of Minnesota about what their barriers were to achieving employment, 27% said their major barrier to achieving employment was a lack of a high school diploma or GED. We hear from providers frequently that the cost of the GED is one of the prohibitive factors for people who are experiencing homelessness. And at our latest project, Homeless Connect event, we've been doing these one-stop-shop service events in Minneapolis this past year. We've had three events where we bring multiple services to one location so that people experiencing homelessness can simply come one place to get connected to housing, employment, education opportunities, medical care, et cetera, all in one place. And we served 1,300 people experiencing homelessness at the last event in December. Several of those people frequented the education booths asking for assistance with their GED testing fees. And we were able to, with some private dollars we'd raised in the community, we were able to provide 26 people with GED tests with money that we raised, but that was just 26 out of many, many more people that were there that day looking for that kind of assistance. Your support of this bill will help us all achieve our goal of increasing education and employment rates for both homeless adults and homeless unaccompanied youth in our communities, and ultimately we'll be helping in ending their homelessness. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Carly Peterson. I'm a community education manager for adult basic education in Minneapolis Public Schools. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm testifying today in favor of House File 751. We're grateful for Representative Hornstein's attention to the GED and the people who are homeless who are looking for a GED. Across the state, about 6,300 people attain their GED in Minnesota annually. That's only, not quite even, 2% of the people who do not have a GED. Over 370,000 people over the age of 25 do not have a high school credential in Minnesota. In Minneapolis, we're interested in this bill because we run the largest GED testing center in the state and the only testing center in Minneapolis. The Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development tells us that people who have a GED make 25% more income than people who have dropped out of high school. So we're hoping that by improving access to the GED testing process, that we can help people attain their GED and find employment and perhaps get some secure and consistent housing, and then they will no longer be homeless.
Thank you. One more testifier.
Okay. One very brief comment.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
I'm Deborah Jans. I came to Minneapolis in 1967 as a homeless youth from New York. I was fortunate. I lived in the projects with my grandmother, graduated North High in 1968. Thanks to that education, I continued on and graduated the University of Minnesota, where I then went to Washington, D.C. Senator Humphrey placed me in the United States Senate, and I'm fortunate to say, as a Democrat, I retired after 25 years. My last employer was Senator Max Cleland of Georgia. In my family, I'm considered the most successful because I'm the only one that got a high school education. My sister died. She had two more children before she died. They did not get an education. They are currently homeless, and they have children of their own who I'm not sure what their outcome will be. Education is everything. I watched it destroy my family because we didn't have enough of it. And I see it as a critical, critical way to end homelessness in this wonderful state that has incredible education to offer. I was once told in New York that I should quit high school and go to trade school because with my family's background, there's no way I was going to finish high school. And I got so angry that I got on that bus and came to Minneapolis. And thank God for North High. They said, we'll help you. We'll get you a job. We'll help you support yourself. We'll get you out of here, and we'll get you into the university. I never believed it. And my sister years later said to me, you were lucky. You got an education. You don't know what it's like. You were different. Think about that. That's a story that I think will help you support Frank, and something I asked him to think about 2 years ago. And he tried so hard a year ago, and no one got it. I think the commission, which I was a member of, thanks to Lydia and Kathy, have touched upon the need to address homelessness in the state of Minnesota and what you do for others. This was a great state. I still go back to New York and say to people, I got out. I went to Minnesota and lived with Granny and then in the projects, which no longer exist in Minneapolis, and you gave me a chance. And now I live in South Minneapolis, and I pay more taxes than I could ever imagine.
Another bill, another day.
Members, are there questions? I have a question for Ms. Lee. One, this is a very interesting bill. We're having trouble with our fiscal note on this one. We don't have one. So I am not sure how we're going to find out the cost. I think we're going to be waiting on that, correct? You know, this might sound really naive, but how when... folks come and take the test, and then how does one follow if they're homeless? How are they followed up with whether they pass the test, and how do they, where do they take the classes, and how do they have a stable base of where they're taking classes, and how does all that work in terms of contact when there isn't necessarily, and maybe there is a shelter or a temporary housing or a transitional place, but how do you envision that working?
And that's something that the individual will have to help us with to find out how we can get in contact with them, because I'm sure it's important to them, and they'll either have a shelter or some connection who does have stable housing or something. So I think that would have to be designated by the individual.
Okay. In terms of a follow-up place,
yes,
where they can...
Mm-hmm.
Oh. For the 26 scholarships you provided, is that correct? For the scholarship,
just that one day, mm-hmm, in a year where the homeless all gathered for a convention.
How did that work then? That they received scholarships and got their testing, and that's all worked. They've been participating, and
Yeah, we don't have the total picture right now as to what happened. That was in March. That was it didn't happen very long ago.
I think this is something we'd be interested in, and, mm-hmm. and how that's working,
so
and
are we.
So forth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is there members, Representative Fritz?
Your point, and I'm from Faribault, Minnesota, where we have Ruth's House, and I've been on that since the get-go. I asked my local priest, do we actually have homeless people in Faribault? And he said, Patty, they're here every day. So the church gave us a house that was not being used, a great big beautiful old barn-shaped home, and we now have homeless mothers and children there. And they also are tutored there I'm actually doing some tutoring, and there are many others through the nursing program in our town that are tutoring. But what sort of programs are out there to continue that or to advance that for all homeless people? The tests are hard. They are hard. I think I might have a little trouble passing them. I've been out of school a long time, but the mentoring, I would, say that the mentoring of these women and some of their teenage children as well, because the children are also not attending school as well as the mother. So this is a huge problem in my small area, out in greater Minnesota as well. So I just would hope that we could do more mentoring, and I want to thank you for bringing this forward. I just think we should just do all we can to help these people get back to get their GED. I see the smiles, and they get a job, and we hire them at our local nursing home, and they go on, some of them, to become nurses. So I've seen the results of that. So it's very good, and I thank you for your work.
I think that you brought up a couple of very critical issues. Number one, we do in Minneapolis try to make sure that the children still are going to school, and we have bus stops at many of the shelters. So as much as we can, we make sure the kids are still attending school. As far as tutoring for the adults, we do have several adult basic education programs across the city that they can attend. It's a matter of their of actually getting there to be tutored and to be assisted in the learning. But I think that, a lot of these people, they're smart, and they might be able to test out without attending some of the courses.
Thank you. We have one more question. Representative Wardlow, and then we're going to have to move to the next bill. Representative Wardlow?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just curious. I mean, they take this test without ever practicing for it or studying for it. So some of them are probably going to fail. Is there a time limit before they can take it again, or do we let them take it over and over and over for free until they pass it, or...
There are additional costs to taking the test again, so we encourage them to take practice tests first and to make sure they're confident that they'll pass it the first time. But I think additional tests are $20 each.
And so the state would pay for them each time?
That's what we're asking for.
I was just wondering if maybe you'd want to say, well, you can't take it again for another 3 months or something, so that encourage them to study for it somehow. And
they are encouraged to take it when they really feel they're ready, and not just to keep trying just for the sake of trying.
And then you were wondering, the comment was, how do you get the results to them? Is there a thought of giving each one of them a number, and they put the number up like they do in colleges, and these numbers are your names by number, and you can go check your number and see if you passed, or it's just a thought.
How they're informed as to how they did on the test.
If you could come to the table and again identify yourself, this is the meeting to be taped, so.
Madam Chair, Representative Wardlow. Currently, we communicate two different ways to folks. One is through a phone call with the phone number that they leave for us. They can also call us to get their scores anytime they wish. When they pass, they get a letter from us as well as the certificate from the state indicating successful passing of the 5 tests.
Representative Wardlow?
So they do leave you some way to contact them, it sounds like.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, they do leave us contact information currently.
Well, thank you. Representative Hornstein, any closing comments?
Thank you very much. I just really appreciate the committee's attentiveness to this issue and also your willingness to be flexible with our testifiers' schedules and having us up on the agenda. So thank you very much, Madam Chair and committee members.
Well, thank you. House File 751 is moved for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee bill. Next, we will have House File 440, Representative Madore. Welcome to the committee. If we could have somebody move the bill. Okay. Representative Murphy moves House File 440 for possible inclusion into the Omnibus Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee. Welcome to the committee, Representative Madore.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I also have an amendment to the bill.
Okay. Would you like to... can you tell us what that is labeled?
It's H0440A2.
Okay. Representative Madore has an author's amendment labeled H0440A2. May I have a motion to put the bill in the form the author wants?
So moved.
Okay. Representative Murphy moves the author's amendment to House File 440. Everyone has the amendment. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor signify saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, the motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Representative Madore. Is it Madore? Am I pronouncing it correctly?
It's Madore, yes. Madam Chair, I also have one. Because I did not graduate from my wonderful school district 196, I made a mathematical error, and I need to have a verbal amendment to line 1.17, item 2, it's listed as, and I need a change. We need to delete 30,000 and replace that with 37,500.
Representative Madore, this is in the amendment? Or
No, I'm sorry, this is in the actual bill.
Okay. Could you repeat that, please?
It is line 1.17, and it says item 2.
Okay.
And right now it says 30,000. I'd like to erase that or to delete that and replace that with 37,500.
Getting used to doing motions here. Representative Madore has an oral amendment. And does everyone get that? If staff could repeat, when the staff repeat what the amendment is?
Madam Chair, it is on page 1, line 17, strike 30,000 and insert 37,500.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay, hearing none, those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, it does prevail. Amendment is adopted, and Representative Madore, please present your bill to the committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. Today, I'm here to talk about this bill, House File 440. It is a funding bill for adults with disabilities through the community education system that we have established here in the state. Currently, 77 school districts participate with a funding level that has not been adjusted since 1991. I have two testifiers here, and I would like to ask if the committee would allow the testifiers to testify and then take questions. That would be all right?
Yes, welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ram Singh, and I'm the Director of Community Education for School District 196, Rosemount, Apple Valley, Eagan. Today, I'm honored to testify as the representative of the Minnesota Community Education Association. My school district is a fiscal agent for the 5 districts south of the river for the Adults with Disabilities Consortium. The other member districts are Burnsville, Lakeville, Farmington, and Randolph. In addition to the Minnesota Community Education Association, Madam Chair, I'm speaking for thousands of adults with disabilities from school districts across Minnesota. And I say without any reservation that we support House Bill 440. Madam Chair, in 1986, our state legislature appropriated $710,000 to support school districts that provided services for adults with disabilities. Local districts were permitted to match their state aid through the local levy. At that time, many districts came together into consortia to provide cost-effective services for this population. There are about 37 such entities, including school districts and consortia today, and they represent 77 school districts across the state, serving over 35,000 people each year. Since 1986, the financial support from the state and the local levy have frozen. Of course, representatives are aware that costs of services have risen considerably and the population needing services have increased exponentially. Madam Chair, adults with disabilities are our relatives, neighbors, friends, and constituents. They should not be allowed to fall through the cracks. We need to help them mainstream in society. We need to support them in their growth and to be valued. We need to help them live full lives, enjoying the many gifts like learning, socialization, playing, and working, things that we, all of us, take for granted. For us to make this a reality for our citizens, we need to get them out of their group homes, out of their apartments, and to take them to schools and other places in their communities where they can be part of the broader society. We need to provide transportation for them. We need to provide sometimes one-to-one help so that they can learn to make meals for themselves, or write a letter, or do arts and crafts, or just go to the bathroom. Madam Chair, I attend, and many of us here attend these activities in which members of our community participate. I was at dinner with Santa during Christmas and Valentine's social recently. It is a joy to see people with disabilities having fun. Some sitting in their wheelchairs and joyfully moving and swaying to the sounds of the music. You leave that activity brimful of appreciation for the adults with disabilities and the staff and countless volunteers who make it all happen for them. Madam Chair, we count our blessings that we can participate in any activity that we want to. Let us support our fellow citizens with disabilities to have better, richer lives. Let us support them just to live. This Bill 440 will enable districts to serve their citizens with disabilities and make their lives more meaningful. We are not asking for much, Madam Chair. We are asking for full support of this bill. As you are aware, the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, requires that school districts provide reasonable access and accommodations to all programs available to people of the community. Passage of this bill will go a far way in helping community education and school districts to be in compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act. More importantly, the adults with disabilities in our communities, our friends, neighbors, relatives, and constituents will lead fuller and happier lives. Our adults with disabilities throughout Minnesota, thank you for this opportunity to testify, and we ask for your full support of this bill. Madam Chairman, thank you for the opportunity, and I will be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. If we could have the second testifier come forward. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name
Thank
for
you.
The record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representatives. I'm Michael Garrison. I'm by my gray and receding hairline, you can tell I'm a long-term taxpaying citizen of Minnesota and also the parent of a 22-year-old daughter with Down syndrome. And I'm here as a parent to share with you the wonderful experience that we have of our daughter and also witnessing her peers in the programs that are provided by, in our area, the River Valley Project Explorer Group, which is the five-member consortium that Mr. Singh referred to a few minutes ago. Since the passage of the Disabilities Act in 1991, the five-member consortium's benefits from the state in aid has been frozen at slightly over $13,000 divided amongst those communities. That restriction also capped the ability of local school districts to levy to a like amount. So since 1991 and 92, you can see the purchasing power has quite diminished and the costs of services have gone up, but the benefits have not. In 1991, for instance, the state aid and matching local levy accounted for 91% of the costs of this program, and the user fees and tuitions only were 1%. In the year 2000, the proportion that the state aid and levies provided was 56%, and the user fees increased to 28%. In the past year, the state aid and matching local levies participation went down below 20% to 19%, and user fees have increased to 43% of the program's costs. My wife and I are fortunate in that we're able to pay those fees, but many of the users of these programs are incapable of doing so. They come from families of low income. They have limited incomes themselves. And many occasions, they are in foster homes, group homes, in institutions, and have the limited ability to pay for themselves. What we're asking for here today is really a nominal amount, considering the usage. When you consider this is going to be broadcast to multiple users in a congregate area of over 200,000 population. And I guess that's just from a parochial view of our consortium. It is very, very important to these kids. They can be alienated once they complete their K-12 and their transition pluses and other programs in the districts. They can become easily disenfranchised, underemployed, limited in their exposure to the community. And I can't say enough about the positive results of the community integration that comes from programs like these. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions? Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this permissive? I'm just trying to read into this. It sounds like some of this is an increase from the state, but is it also permissive levying for the district?
Yes. I think the way the current legislation reads, the state aid can go up to $30,000, I believe. And that legislation permits local districts to levy a like amount, but not to exceed that. Okay. As I mentioned earlier, we have been frozen since 1991-92 at $13,000 plus, and so that has inhibited our ability to levy beyond that amount as well on an annual basis.
Thank you. Any other questions, Representative Gottwald?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand that the numbers in this program currently have remained stable for many years. And so one question I have is, you know, as we're talking about all this additional revenue coming in, where is it going to go? If we have basically the same number of people involved, where is all this additional money going? What's it going
for? Mr. Garrison?
When you look at it on an individual user basis, we're not talking about a lot of dollars. Maybe Mr. Singh will have more figures on the
Madam Chair.
Mr. Singh.
Madam Chair, Ram Singh. Representative, right now we have people on the waiting list. There are people in group homes that we cannot get out because transportation is a big cost for us. So what we have now, we're doing our best with volunteers, but there's just so many people you can have to come out and take people to an activity or to be with people. That's what this increased funding will do for our program. At least it would help us to serve more people and do a better job with these people.
Representative Medora, any closing comments?
No, other than to say that as an active volunteer for many years with my school district and in my community education department, I can tell you my director here does wonderful things with very limited dollars. And the program director, Derek Appleyard, who's not here today, is one of the most dedicated employees I've ever seen. And with their $13,314 that they've been able to get over the past several years, they have just created an environment for people that is just wonderful, with dances and opportunities to get out and socialize. So I strongly encourage everyone to offer this opportunity to all the school districts and to support this bill.
Thank you, and thank you for coming today and testifying.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Last, we'll have Representative Bly. Well, he's coming up on House File 555. I wanted to talk about the current subgroup we have and the current subgroup we're forming, or that is being formed. Representative Gottwald, is it the parent engagement work group? Do you want to give a short report about your meeting this week?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have our membership right now includes Representative John Ward. We have Representative Frank Hornstein and Representative Aaron Murphy, as well as my colleague Rob Eastland, myself, and who else do we have, Rob?
Representative Sandra Erickson.
Correct. We had a brief initial meeting, talked about a number of issues related to parental engagement. I've since forwarded some additional information, but I think we're trying to come down around what you and I had discussed at one time. Is this going to end up being some legislation, or is this going to end up being some criteria by which we can kind of evaluate legislation coming before this committee and maybe have pieces of that become part of legislation, primarily focusing on parental engagement? You know, we know that perhaps the best learning environment of all for young people is a healthy parental engagement family environment. And we know that not all kids have that, too. So I think we're going to have some interesting discussions. We're in the process of setting up a second meeting.
Well, thank you for doing that. And, there is something called the Family Impact Checklist we could talk about that lays out how to kind of lay policies against whether they're family-friendly and parenting. I need to, and then I'm going to talk about the second work group, I need to make sure that Representative Medora's bill is properly in its place, that House File 440 is moved for possible inclusion into the Omnibus Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee. And then, Representative Peterson, you're also going to be doing a work group, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes, Madam Chair. We're going to call this group System of Accountability and Quality Improvement. And we're going to try to look at this whole system of early childhood education and be able to maybe take it apart a bit and then put it back together in some semblance that deals with coherence and quality. So we'll see. I do need people to serve on the committee. We'd like, you know, four or five people. So if you're eager to volunteer for one more meeting, a few more meetings, two or three probably, where we try to kind of lay out all the pieces of this early childhood system we have in Minnesota and try to restructure it.
Okay. Then Representative Gottwald did initially, it was very much bipartisan, and it was kind of evolving as people are joining. Mm-hmm. But if we could work to keep it bipartisan evenly, hopefully we get the same number of members on each side. And
absolutely.
Good.
I'll ask if they don't volunteer.
Okay. So there you go. And Representative Garofalo, did you have a question?
There's more process questions, Madam Chair. That with the bill we just had, we had not a delete all, but it substantially changed the bill. In terms of finding out, I didn't ask the testifier, but in terms of finding out what it costs, how do we find out that information?
I'll refer to Ms. Adrian.
Madam Chair, Representative Breslow, what we'll do is we'll request another fiscal note on the amendment. So we'll wait until there's sort of a finalized version, and then we'll provide you with a fiscal note for the original bill and then for the amendment as well.
Okay. And
Representative Graffel?
So, Madam Chair, the on the website, the fiscal note that shows, we'll actually see both fiscal notes, so we'll see the impact of the change.
Ms. Edwards?
That's the hope, yes.
Okay. And then, Madam Chair, so again, more of a process question.
Sure.
When we put together the omnibus bill, I'm assuming we'll have an omnibus bill out of this committee. When we put together the omnibus bill, will we, you know, sometimes what people ask for, they can't completely put into the omnibus bill, we only get a portion of it. Will we get one giant fiscal note on the bill, or will we have fiscal notes for each provision and language within the bill?
I can ask Ms. Adrians, but I do believe there's going to be there's a couple things that, based on custom and usage, happen here at the Capitol, and I'm not sure I'm going to get all of these right. But when you're dealing with an education committee, there is your kind of base amount, but there is usually a levy target. So for this particular community, Ed will go into a levy target that we'll be talking about with overall with all the committees. And then we are going to be seeing some tax credits, and those will be going into the tax committee, but there could potentially be a sort of a tax credit target too. So there's often a way that they split them out that we're still working on. Ms. Adrians, do you have any further comments on that?
Well, the target, from my understanding, is that we should see it in March, I believe. And then what will happen is with the omnibus bill, it will look like I don't believe there's necessarily separate fiscal notes, but you'll have the different programs and accounts that we have in the committee. And so it'll say, for example, MFIP, and then it'll just be a total amount that has been decided to spend on MFIP childcare. And then the same for all of the other, you know, all the Department of Education and all of the DHS accounts as well.
Madam Chair,
I guess
I understand the tracking spreadsheets, and I've done that. The thing that I'm new to is, again, the levy portion of things and understanding whether we just get one target saying this is what the levy is going up or down by, and is it done on a bill-by-bill basis? Is it broken out? I understand the tracking spreadsheets. Mm-hmm. That's the levy portion that I'm, in all candor, quite confused about.
Well, Representative Groffalo, and me too. I mean, I can check into that. I believe there will be a target or a fiscal target in general for levies, and then they potentially will break it out by committee. Most of the levies fall into the education, particularly K-12's purview. So it will be working within that is what I understand, is there will be kind of a bigger one, and then seeing how we're going to do that. There's, you know, frankly, you know, levies affect property taxes, so it is going to be up to all of you to decide what we're going to do about that. And then we'll see how big that target is because of that reason.
And Chair, again, not to add further confusion upon confusion, but in the past when we voted in the budget resolution process and we've established the individual committee finance targets, I want to refresh my recollection, but I don't remember voting on the... Remember, we had the individual like K-12 budget amounts, but I don't remember voting on the levy targets, and I just... As a matter of, I mean, obviously, whatever the process was in the past can change in the future. There'll be right. Different rules. I'm trying to figure out what to expect here. And
right.
If anyone could offer any guidance, either in committee or afterwards, on how we will or will not be voting on that, I would mm-hmm. certainly appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll look into that. I mean, that's definitely things we're talking about. And as you know, with with new chairs that are figuring it out and kind of how it's all going to work. But I appreciate you bringing it up because I would like to know, too, and I'd like to be able to articulate to you how this is going to work. We're just a little bit away from that yet. As you know, the forecast will come up and then targets will be set after that. So, Ms. Adrians, if we can get a handle on how this is going to work, I would appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And how this is going to work, I would appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And we will work on that. And if we don't get back to you, can you make sure you bring it up again?
Oh, I will. No problem, Madam Chair. Okay. And again, in fairness to the chair, I don't know how we did it in 2005. I know in the budget resolution process, we did not. I'm virtually certain we did not vote on a levy, statewide levy, but maybe it was buried in the tax bill or something.
So. Representative Groffalo, I think maybe you didn't have a statewide levy target. I don't know that, but, I mean, there might not have been an increase on the table. Mm-hmm. Just a comment. I would have to go back and look at the record, but that might have been one of the reasons, is sometimes if they're flat, there would be...
Yeah, again, we'll adding confusion on confusion. So, all right, thanks.
Thank you. Representative Bly, you have 12 minutes. No, and we could go maybe just a little bit over because we were trying to give everybody 15 minutes, but...
Was there a vote on Representative Medora's?
Well, I rolled it in okay. in the middle of the right. comments there, so we're well, you guys can call me on, you, committee members may address me on process because we're working on a process. We do need to move your bill, though, yes. which you can
Madam
move.
Chair, I'd like to move for consideration for the omnibus bill in early childhood, House file number 555.
Representative Bly moves House File 555 for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Learning Finance Omnibus Bill. Representative Bly, if you could state your name for the committee and present your bill.
Yes, this is Representative Bly. And the bill before you is asking for an increase in youth services through community education. And community education programs are spread throughout the state, and almost all of them provide this kind of program. I might draw your attention to a handout in your packets called Youth and Community Education, which shows the three general areas that this might concern: school-age child care, and you can see it in the middle on the front page, school-age child care, youth development, youth service, general youth programs. And in general, what this is, there's kind of a two-tier system in the funding here. One for communities smaller than 10,000 residents, and what we're asking for is an increase from $1.85 to $2.25, and then the other tier, which was those communities above 10,000 residents, going from 43 cents to a dollar. You know, these programs across the state have served 443,000 students with the opportunity for leadership development and enrichment. Over a million elementary and secondary school youth were engaged in positive after-school and summer programs, which included tutoring, academic support, the arts, recreation, languages, and work skills. Also, 112,000 children received high-quality school-age child care. I have with me my community ed director in Northfield, Hannah Pushko, and I'd like her to talk about some of the things in Northfield.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
I'm Hannah Pushko, community services director for Northfield Public Schools. Madam Chair and members of the committee and Representative Bly, thank you so much for the opportunity to address you today concerning the needs for additional funding for youth through House File 555. In every Minnesota community, there is a community education program to serve all of the residents of the school district. This opportunity for communities is unique to Minnesota. Nowhere else in the nation can one find such a universal access system. One of the hallmarks of community education is the ability to successfully collaborate with other organizations, agencies, and programs in the communities. Through effective collaboration, community education youth programs have leveraged resources from facilities to program staff to real dollars. That means that in every community in Minnesota, there already exists a vehicle for providing services and programs that address the needs and positive development of the children and youth of Minnesota. And what does that programming look like in these communities across the state? It is after-school enrichment activities like arts, recreation, environmental experiences, and skill building. It's academic tutoring involving community volunteers. It is mentoring programs matching at-risk youth with older youth or adult community members who serve as mentors. It is a middle school youth center, a youth service project, and it is youth serving on boards, councils, and commissions engaged in local decisions. Youth programs and services provided by community education build strong children and youth, socially, physically, emotionally, intellectually, and spiritually. As Representative Bly noted, in the 2004-2005 year, 443,000 young people were involved in youth development and youth service activities, and as he also mentioned, over a million young people, elementary and secondary age, involved in youth enrichment activities. After-school programs for children and youth offer safe, constructive, and positive environments that protect them from risky behaviors. National research shows that youth programs change lives. Children and youth in programs show increased academic achievement and greater engagement in learning. In Northfield, the Connected Kids Mentoring Program, which serves our most at-risk young people in elementary and middle school, has seen significant increase in academic achievement by students who are mentored. 33% of the mentored students demonstrated an increase in their GPA. National research also shows that students in youth programs have increased school attendance. The mentored students in Connected Kids in Northfield charted a 79% decrease in unexcused absences in 1 year of participating in the program. 55% of the participants in Connected Kids are children and youth of color, 43% of whom are Latino, our fastest growing population of color in Northfield. The Search Institute, the National Research Council, and the Institute of Medicine all report that children and youth in youth programs demonstrate better emotional adjustment and connection to school and community. Youth in programs also have reduced risk-taking behaviors. In Northfield, the focus of school and community connectedness in our youth programs and in our schools and the many youth groups in our community has all helped to reduce school attendance problems, especially by our at-risk youth. When the legislature approved the youth enrichment levy in 2002, Northfield dedicated its funding to the expansion of a Northfield Middle School Youth Center located right in the school building. Since then, that center has thrived with more than 100 middle schoolers enrolled. On a typical day, almost 90% of the youth attending are students of color, many of whom are not involved in school sports, after-school programs that are sponsored by other agencies. Through its youth development work, community education makes it possible for youth to participate in the decisions of their community. In Northfield, Mayor Lee Lansing instituted the city's Youth Advisory Council, which allows youth and adults in the community to work together to find solutions to issues like promoting chemical-free activities, again aimed at protecting against risky behaviors. It is community ed youth programs in collaboration with our Healthy Community Initiative that supports the operation of this council. While these examples speak to the success of community education's work with youth, that effort is not without its challenges. Youth programs struggle to continue while exhausting grant sources, cutting staff, and always literally operating on a very tight shoestring. Transportation is a constant challenge. Sustaining programs with very limited resources makes it very difficult to ensure that our young people will have a place to go or a staff person to rely on during the next semester, the next summer, or the next year. An increase in community education funding for youth could help stabilize these programs in Northfield and throughout the state of Minnesota so that we can continue to help children and youth be more successful in school, feel a part of their communities, and avoid those risky behaviors that can destroy a future. In conclusion, almost every day we hear of the looming impact of the retiring or soon-to-be-retired baby boomer generation. While the demographics may indicate that the largest sector of the population may be older adults, it will always be the younger generations that society depends on. This bill allows Minnesota to continue to invest in our youth and our children in order to secure all of our futures. Thank you.
Thank you. And we do have to end on time, but we do have some questions. I'm having trouble, maybe I should ask the fiscal analyst, and I think the committee, there's all these different parts of the community ed levy, so how does this all come together? If there's the youth enrichment grants and the disability part, and the, is this all, can you tell us how this fits together? And if we really would be considering one increase, or we'd be considering several small increases, or do we add them all up, or do we know? Or Ms. Johnson, can you give us a better idea? Or
the bill or the statute as it has existed separates out those different portions. So there's the general community ed youth levy. There are the ECFE and school readiness funding streams, levy and entitlement, et cetera. And youth is a separate one. The adults with disabilities, adult basic education, but it's all in one large statute.
I should know that, and thank you. So we committee, then we would be considering them or increases separately based on whatever kind of target that we get. And I understand it's going to be a levy target. And working within that, we'll have to be making our funding decisions.
Yeah.
But I think that obviously after school programs, and you talked about the good things with in terms of cutting down absences and also with mentoring and tutoring and, right. and those types of things, it can do a lot for middle school and high school kids and even younger. Any questions from the members? Okay. And with that, we don't know you're not rushed, but we will remember, and you're now in the mix of for consideration. And if we need to, okay. So we want to put House File 5. Oh, Representative Bly, any closing comments?
Well, I would just say that in regards to Northfield, I have taught summer school for 20 years, and over those 20 years, I have seen these programs emerge and develop, and I can testify that the children who go through these programs feel more connected to school and more connected to the community, and it's very evident in the way that they show their expression about being in the school building. So I speak very highly of the work that they've done.
Good. Well, thank you, and thank you for coming today and testifying. House File 555 is officially laid on the table for further consideration and possible inclusion in the Omnibus Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee bill. And with that, this committee is adjourned.